Welcome to Stacktrace, a show where we talk about Apple news from a developer's perspective. And this week, we are doing our first ever WWDC poker episode. Yay!
It's going to be really exciting. We are going to do a little twist on the standard kind of prediction episode. We were a little bit inspired by our friends on the Upgrade podcast, where they, before each Apple event, they do like a draft where they draft different things they think might happen.
It's not a draft. It's a draft.
It's not a draft. It's not a... right, of course. but we didn't want to do like exactly what they do, obviously. So we wanted to put our own little twist on it. So we decided that let's play a little game of poker about what we think will happen at WWDC.
Why poker?
Well, why not? Everything's more fun with poker, right?
But before we go to that, we have some other news we should talk about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Things have not stopped since we last recorded. And there's been a bunch of things happening, which is pretty cool. So, Rambo, why don't you tell us about iOS 11.4?
Finally.
iOS 11.4
That's the
review.
Result.
Finally.
Yeah. There are at least two finalists in this release, which are AirPlay 2 and Messages in iCloud. And yeah. I'm very happy about it, especially AirPlay 2. It's a lot better than the regular AirPlay. And I've already updated my HomePod and it's running the new OS. And I tried AirPlay 2 and it's awesome. And I'm buying a new HomePod.
that is just worth it right there. They're just getting everyone to buy new HomePods.
Yeah.
So that's why it's AirPlay 2, because you need two HomePods.
Yeah, so it's very nice. And it's funny because I am never running the stable version of any of Apple's OSs. Well, macOS, I'm avoiding the betas for now because they're very buggy. But I'm running the final version of iOS for 6 days.
Whoa, that's crazy. Must be some form of record.
Yeah. So 6 days because, of course, in 6 days is WWDC. And they are going to release the first beta of iOS 12. And, of course, I'm going to install it immediately.
Like there's no tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like for me, I have sometimes installed the betas like on day one, but usually I don't. Usually I'm a little bit more conservative about it, mainly because, you know, I use my phone every day and I'm this kind of person, you know, I am a developer. I like new stuff. I like new technologies and I like to preview things. But at the same time, I mostly just want my technology to work. That's kind of why I'm an Apple user. And with betas, like I like putting a beta on like my secondary phone or my test device, but I usually don't put it on my main device.
You see, I do the opposite, which is kind of crazy. So
That's funny.
I have three iPhones. I have an iPhone 10, an iPhone 6S, and an iPhone 5S. And you can guess which one is my daily driver.
It must be the iPhone 6S, right?
Yeah, of course. So what I do is I install the beta on my iPhone 10 because it's the top of the line iPhone. So it's going to get all of the new features because some older devices don't necessarily get all new features. And if I'm having too many issues with it, I just switch the SIM card and use the 6S as my phone and keep the iPhone 10 with the beta.
Right. Okay. All right. That's an interesting strategy.
So if I only had one iPhone, I would never install a major beta like an iOS 12 beta.
Right. Like I only have one iPhone that I want to use, which is my iPhone 10, which I want to use like all the time. So that's why I'm a little bit more conservative about these things. I'm really happy that we now have messages in the cloud. iMessage is more and more becoming like something I use all the time. I was previously a pretty heavy user of Facebook Messenger, but now I have, you know, switched over a lot to iMessage instead. And I must say, like getting all the messages in the cloud, I think is going to be a pretty big upgrade. And not only to be able to, you know, upload, or it's going to upload in the background, I guess, a lot of the old messages and old attachments, so you don't have to keep them on the phone. But also just to be able to, when you sign into a new device, to actually get all your messages there, which was always something really strange for me with iMessage, where you would get your new phone and your messages just wouldn't be there.
Yeah, and if you have like your Mac sleeping for a long time, you'd open up your Mac and then you start getting notifications for messages you've already seen on your phone.
You get bombarded. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a lot better. And I understand why it took so long for them to get it right, because it's not easy. The iMessage structure is very complicated, mainly because of security and privacy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it's harder to sync stuff when you have so many constraints about how secure and private you want everything to be.
Yeah, especially when you're going to store it somewhere, like in the cloud. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, you have to think about how you handle those encryption keys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and iMessage is very integrated with the system. So you have the business iMessage now, so you have to take care of that. And there are lots of little issues that make it harder than it sounds.
Yeah, for sure. And this is something, you know, you don't want to lose people's messages, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can sometimes, when you're building some form of apps where you have some cache or something like that, or some form of data that is not super critical because you could always get it back somewhere. I mean, when you lose a message, if a message doesn't arrive, it can be really, really bad. So I understand why Apple was, you know, playing it safe with this one. And hopefully now that it's here, it's going to work flawlessly. That's what I hope, at least. All right. Another piece of news is something that you actually had a bit of a scoop on this past week, which is a rumored new piece of hardware from Apple under the name Project Star. But since this is not like a regular episode, since this is our WWDC poker episode, and we want to be able to spend as much time as possible on that, we're going to postpone that discussion a little bit until after WWDC. So then you're going to hear more about what we think about that. And maybe this rumor has also evolved a little bit after that. So we'll be able to give you a little bit more better like analysis and better thoughts on what could this Project Star, what it might be.
Yeah, and it's a complicated rumor because there are many sides to it. And there are two names and they could be the same thing and they could be not the same thing. So we need some time to discuss it. But why don't you tell people about the after show that we are doing next week?
Yeah, sure. So like we mentioned on the last episode, we just launched a new Patreon award called The After Show. And it's going to be a live video Q&A session that's going to take place. The first one of these is going to take place on the Tuesday of WWDC week on the 5th. And we're really excited about this. It's going to be 1 hour with me and Guy live on video. We're going to answer your questions, talk to you about what happened during WWDC, you know, maybe dig into some of these APIs, look at some code together, just kind of hang out for 1 hour and, you know, talk to our good friends on Patreon. And if you want to join this after show, which we really hope, all you have to do is support us with more than $5 per month on Patreon. And you can go to stacktracepodcast.fm/aftershow to get redirected to the right page on Patreon if you want to sign up for this. So we hope that you want to join us for this after show. We're really excited about it. And we can't wait to talk to you more about what's going to happen at WWDC.
Okay, so it's time. Let's do our first ever WWDC poker. And before that, please, John, explain the rules to our listeners.
Sure, absolutely. This is a variant of the Texas Hold'em poker style. No, it's not. This is a... I don't know how much it actually has to do with poker, but it's more about betting and maybe a little bit about bluffing. So we're going to see how it's going to go. This is all like a big experiment, but I think it's going to be fun. So the way this is going to work is that me and Rambo, we have prepared a pretty long list about things that we think might happen next week. And what we're talking about here is we're talking about things that will be announced on stage during the WWDC keynote. Are we also including the State of the Union or just the keynote?
Let's do just the keynote.
Okay, so it's just the opening keynote of WWDC. So we're going to take turns, and then each person is going to pick an item from this list. And then here comes the poker part. So we're going to assign each item 1 to 5 points. We're going to bet like up to 5 points on our pick. according to how likely we think it is that it might happen. So if I pick something and I think it's really likely that's going to happen, I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to bet 5 points on this. Now, if I'm right and that ends up being showed during the keynote on WWDC, then I get those points. But if it doesn't, if I'm wrong, then I lose those points. So it's really, really a big gamble here. And here comes the other little poker twist here. I hope I didn't make these rules too complicated, but we'll see. Hopefully it'll be fun. Here comes the poker twist also. And that is that before we kind of dive into the prediction, the other person can then either make like a counter bet and say, no, I think you're wrong. I bet, you know, 5 points that you're wrong. Or they can bet with you as well. So if I pick something that is like extremely likely to happen, then it's not 5 free points for me, because then Rambo can also pick 5 points, which means, you know, that will pretty much cancel each other out. So do these rules make sense, Rambo?
Yeah, and then John is going to make a spreadsheet afterwards with our points.
Very scientific.
Yeah, and we're going to check it when the keynote is over. And in the next episode, we're going to do the review of who won.
Exactly. And what should the prize be?
I have no idea.
How about we're going to take a trip together later this year? Now, we can't announce yet what it is and what we're going to do on this trip, but we're going to take a trip later this year. We can say that.
It's not our honeymoon.
It's not our honeymoon.
Sorry about that. I couldn't hold it.
On this trip, whoever losers need to buy the other person dinner. Is that a good bet?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay,
and great. It's going Let's to be a very nice dinner based on where we're going.
Yes,
they
I
have
think
very
so.
Good food.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and I can't wait to announce it, but we can't.
We can't. We have to seal our lips for now. All right, so I have a way here. So we need to decide now. The first thing we need to decide is who's going to start, right? So I came up with a way here how we're going to determine this.
Wow, you thought about everything.
I've spent more time on this than I think maybe I should have. So what I've done here, Rambo, is that I've entered the Swift REPL here on the command line.
Ooh.
And I've typed import foundation. And now I'm going to type arc4random_uniform100. And now you have to pick whether you want to pick 0 to 49 or 50 to 99.
Okay.
Which one do you want to pick?
I'm going to pick 50 and up.
Okay, 50 and up. So here we go. Enter. 91. So you start.
Woo!
Isn't that the best way of flipping a coin?
Yeah, the best part about it is that I can't see your screen, so you could make up anything.
Well, you won, so...
Okay.
I think you can take my word for this one.
Yeah. So, should it go in order, or can I pick any one of those in the
list?
You
can pick anything you want.
Ah, okay, so let's...
And by the way, we're going to do 10 picks each.
Okay.
Yeah, so 10 rounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first pick I'm going to do is more advanced options for do not disturb mode, and I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay, so you're betting 3 points that Apple will announce more advanced options for do not disturb.
Yeah.
All right. I will call you on that. So I will also bet 3 points that Apple will do this.
The criteria for this one is that there's going to be some new option for do not disturb mode. Anything, any new option. And it's going to be announced at the keynote, or at least shown in a big slide with lots of new features. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So yeah, so what I'm thinking is that they have implemented the do not disturb while driving mode recently, and it's really a nice feature. And do not disturb is still too binary for me. I think we should have more options for do not disturb mode. And I think they are going to improve it this year. Maybe use some clever machine learning things to determine whether to enable it or not or something. So yeah, I think they are going to improve that this year significantly.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's very, very likely. And I think, like you mentioned, they might use machine learning for this to decide, like, you know, now you're home or now you're at work. So when you're at work, you should, you know, not use Do Not Disturb. Or when you leave this location, it will be turned off and things like that. Because I know a lot of people, myself included, like who turn on Do Not Disturb while you work. And then once you stop working, you want Do Not Disturb to go away, right? You want to be able to be disturbable again. So definitely, I think this is very likely.
You know what would be great? If I could turn on Do Not Disturb when I have Xcode open on my Mac.
Oh yeah, that would be super cool. Like to create these like scripts or like associations with different apps.
Yeah, automation.
Automation, yeah. That's a good one. Speaking of automation, I'm actually going to go ahead and pick this one because it's actually the one that I'm most excited about, I think, as well. And that is that I think there's going to be a workflow kit, which is basically the app that Apple acquired. I think it was like 2 years ago, 1 year ago, which is called Workflow.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, apparently, these developers who were working on this workflow app are now working on some form of new automation system. And the Mac has had automation for a while in terms of Automator and Apple Script and all these things. But on iOS, there's only been this third-party workflow app. But I think there's going to be a developer tool called Workflow Kit or something like that that you know you can integrate into your app to automate certain tasks and let users automate things. And I think there's going to be some kind of built-in way to automate tasks on iOS. And I'm going to give this one a 4. So I'm betting 4 points that we're going to see Workflow Kit.
I'm going to bet 3.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
Maybe my 4 is more coming out of excitement than likelihood. I don't know. I just would love to see this because I love automation. And I think it would make especially the iPad a lot more powerful when you could do... I mean, I know the Workflow app and it's really, really great. And, you know, people are doing really, really cool and interesting things with it. But this is one of these things. It would just be so much more powerful if it was built into the system.
Yeah. So some sort of way for apps to advertise themselves to Workflow? Is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah, maybe, you know, another extension point, like you create an extension that is a workflow, I guess, or a workflow item, a workflow action that can be invoked that has like input output. So if you're like a note-taking app, for example, you can accept a string as input and that would be the note that you create or a to-do item or something like that. And I think that could be pretty cool. And it could also kind of tie into how you use Siri because you could then invoke workflows from Siri. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities once you have something like this in place.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So I'm going to pick now an overhauled iBooks app, which is going to be renamed to Books. And it's going to have a brand new Apple Bookstore with a new design.
All right. That's a very specific bet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some inside information here, Rambo? Are you cheating?
Maybe.
Have you been spelunking again?
And I'm going to, of course, bet 5 on that one.
Oh, okay. All right. So you definitely have been spelunking.
I'm going all in on that one.
Or maybe you're bluffing. Well, I don't know. We'll see.
So how much do you do on that one?
I should trust you, right? Let's see here. So you're saying that there will be a new bookstore. There will be a rename, which we've already seen happen in previous betas, right? But then it was reverted.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a new storefront, probably matching the iOS App Store, right? Like the new design for the storefront.
Yeah. I'm not betting that it's going to be like the new iOS App Store necessarily, but I'm betting that it's going to be redesigned.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to say 4. All right. I also think it's very likely. But since they have gone back and forth so much about it, I'm not sure if we're going to see it now or we're going to see it in the fall, maybe. You know, it seems more like a kind of consumer event, even though, you know, WWDC, the keynote, is not only for developers. It's like the whole iOS thing. But yeah, I think it's also very likely, but I just have a little bit of a doubt.
Yeah, so my thinking is that, well, something weird happened because I think it was Bloomberg that had a scoop about that there was going to be a new iBook Store design and that the app was going to get some new features. And then a few days later, it was iOS 11.3, the first beta came out, and it had the iBook Store renamed to Books. And right. I went spelunking, and I found a lot of evidence about the overhaul. And in fact, the version of the app was a full major version ahead of the previous one. So let's say the previous one was version 4 point something and the new one was version 5. Those are not the actual numbers, but it was something like that.
Yeah.
And I noticed that there was a feature switch in the app that was disabling the new design, basically. And it was hard-coded, so I couldn't enable it to check it out, but it was there. And then on the next beta, they reverted back to the previous version of the app, which makes me think that they included the new app by accident or by mistake.
Right, someone merged it into the wrong branch. It should have been to the iOS 12 branch, but it went into the 3 or something
like
that. Yeah,
I think that's what happened, and they fixed it on the next release.
Right.
So, yeah. I think it's probably coming. But again, as a reminder to people who are listening, we need these things to be mentioned in the keynote. So,
yeah,
you know, it might get the update, but not be mentioned in the keynote.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking, because if it's just like a name change and if the store is updated to match the iOS App Store, I mean, they might mention it, but it might also be something they just do and it's just, you know, something we discover afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a good pick. It's a solid pick. And iBooks is not something that is like very, very often getting a lot of attention, but it's an interesting thing. And I would think that Apple would like to use a similar design for all of their storefronts, right?
Yeah.
All right. So time for my next pick. And I'm going to keep on the same path that I was on before. And I'm going to talk about another Apple acquisition. So a couple of months ago, I think it was maybe 6 months or something like that ago now, Apple acquired a Canadian company called Buddybuild. And Buddybuild, they built this CI service for iOS and Android. And Apple, of course, after acquiring them, they shut down the Android support. And the rumor now has been that they will launch some form of CI service that it will be available to us as, you know, Apple developers. So it might be too early for that since the acquisition just happened not that long ago, but I would love to see Apple provide some form of CI service that is like in the cloud, because they've had the Xcode bots, they've had the Xcode server thing, but those have never really been heavily used because most teams need their CI to happen like, you know, on a server in the cloud so anyone can push to it from anywhere. So I would love to see something like this. And what do you think about that, Rambo?
So how many points are you giving to that?
All right, I have to give the points. Yeah. I'm going to give that a 3. I don't think it's super likely, but I think it might happen. At least, you know, something might happen.
So what's the criteria? Do they have to mention Buddybuild by name, or is it
They will definitely not do that, yeah. I don't think. But I think they will maybe like say, and we have something really cool for you developers. We have the Apple CI, or, you know, Xcode in the cloud, or whatever you want to call it.
Okay. I'm actually going to expand this a little bit, and okay. I'm going to bet a 5, and I'm going to add to that they are going to call it Buddybuild.
Oh, that is very interesting.
Yeah, so if they don't call it Buddybuild, I don't get those points. I lose them.
Or that's a race right there. Yeah, you're really you know,
I'm raising the bet
poker
here.
Metaphor. Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, I think that's happening. But it's,
why do you think they're going to keep the name Buddybuild?
I'm basing this on the TestFlight acquisition.
Right.
So
yeah, that makes sense.
I think they might follow the same pattern there.
I'm wondering, though, if there is the same kind of strength in the name Buddybuild as there was in TestFlight when they acquired it. Because TestFlight was one of those services that, I mean, pretty much everyone was using, right? I mean, when I was working on apps back then, it was like the go-to solution for distributing. Like everyone was like, send me a test flight. And I don't feel the same way about Buddy Build, even though it's a nice, catchy name.
Yeah, we'll see. And Apple likes Buddy.
Right. Yeah, Plist Buddy and all these things, right?
Yeah, and Purple Buddy.
Yeah. So what do you think about the idea that Apple might provide some form of CI service? Do you think this is something they want to do? Do you think this is a game they want to get into? Or do you think they're happy with third parties supplying this kind of stuff?
I think it would be a really nice addition to their toolkit for developers. First, because we pay $99 a year and we should get something out of it. And we also pay 30%, which is a crazy amount.
So, yeah, where's all our Apple tax money going?
Yeah, so I want my Apple tax money to have something to show for it. So yeah, so I think it's a very good addition. And if you think about it, there are some aspects of it that could be better if it's on Apple's hands, because they can do all of the integration with their provisioning servers and all of the code signing stuff without you having to provide your certificates to a third party.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
iTunes Connect,
like, that's
access.
A big benefit.
So they could do continuous deployment and stuff like that. So I really think it's a good addition.
Yeah, and they already have Test Flight, right? And they already have iTunes Connect, of course, and they control that whole pipe. So it's like the missing piece of the puzzle, right? In order to be able to go from Xcode to the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really cool. The question is just, for me at least, if we see it this year or if it's something that's going to come out either next WWDC or maybe sometime in between.
We'll see.
All right, it's time for your third pick.
Okay, my third pick is Animoji Stuffs.
Animoji Stuff.
Yeah.
That's a great pick.
So I think there's going to be an Animoji update, and that's going to be with new characters. That's what I'm betting on, and that I'm going to give 5 points.
Right. Yeah, I can't really raise that bet now, can I? So
6.
Yeah. So I agree. I definitely think that there's going to be an Animoji update. And since, you know, there was so much buzz when Animoji came out and there were so many people, you know, including yourself, building the Animoji Studio and all these things.
Which is now called *** Studio.
Right.
For
exactly.
Reasons.
For reasons that should not be mentioned. So I think that would make sense. And it's a crowd pleaser, right? It's like, you know, you can have Craig Federighi coming out on the stage, you know, doing something crazy.
Like a chicken.
Yeah, exactly. I think that could be fun. So yeah, I definitely think that's likely for it to happen. So I'm gonna go with the same bet here as you on a 5 on the Animoji update.
And I feel like every major iOS update must have some very interesting features for regular users to make them update. So like new emoji and new Animoji, that makes people want to update their phones. And I think, unfortunately, iOS 11 got a very bad rap with normal users in terms of stability and battery life and stuff. So I think this year especially, they need those features that users are going to want to upgrade to get access to. So I think Animoji is a great one for that. And beyond that, I'm betting on new characters only. But we could see some other things like FaceTime integration. Maybe they do something to the Clips app with Animoji karaoke and some new scenes. So we could see some new updates to Animoji other than just new characters. Maybe they do an API for developers. Who knows?
Animoji Kit?
Yeah. No, it's actually called Avatar Kit.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a private framework, and it's the one I use for *** Studio.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I mean, integration into the Clips app, I think it's very, very likely. Especially, you know, it was kind of surprising, I think, to a lot of people during the education event that Apple, they were showcasing Clips a lot, and they were showing, like, you know, students and teachers using Clips. And so I think it's an app that Apple really cares about and they want to, you know, continue evolving. And adding an emoji support, I think, would be really, really cool. All right, so now it's my turn for pick number three, and I'm going to pick something a little bit related, and that is the framework that is powering a lot of this stuff. Or actually, I don't know if this is actually powering an emoji to when I, now I'm thinking about it, but I'm talking about ARKit. And ARKit is a really cool framework that Apple introduced last year. It got a lot of buzz, a lot of press, and a lot of people who are not like programmers, they know the name and they know what it is and what it does. And I think that's really, really powerful. So I think Apple is really excited about ARKit. So I think we're going to see an ARKit 2.0 at WWDC with some new features. We already got ARKit 1.5 with vertical surface tracking a couple of months ago. So it's interesting to see what they could do, more, maybe more like better tracking of moving targets and things like that, better object detection. But I'm definitely betting a 5, I think, that we're going to see a new version of ARKit at WWDC.
This is getting difficult because we are agreeing too much, I think.
We're either going to win together or lose together.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 as well because I think it's obvious that they are going to release ARKit 2.0. Are we on 1.5 now? I think that's what it is, right?
So yeah, they called it 1.5, the release they made a couple of months ago, where they added the vertical surface tracking.
Also, breaking news, probably not breaking after we released the episode, but right now, I noticed while looking at the structures for their feed for the WWDC schedule that they have a dedicated track for ARKit.
Wow.
Well, let me fix that. Not ARKit, AR and VR.
Okay, very interesting.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of content about that. And yeah, so definitely, that's a 5.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that Apple is very, very excited about AR. And if we think about it also, you know how we said a couple of episodes ago that, we think back now at like the iOS 8 announcement when they were talking about size classes and how that was like really hinting that a new larger phone would come because they were like, don't hard code pixel metrics, use the size classes. Maybe you want to use this flexible simulator. We won't tell you what it's for, but hint, hint. And I think the same, we'll probably be able to say the same thing about ARKit a couple of years from now when Apple will probably introduce some form of kind of glasses or some form of dedicated AR or VR device. And I think what might end up happening is that all the work that people have been doing with ARKit will be easily portable to this new system because it will be using the same API basically. So I think that's why like there's such a heavy focus on AR. It's like I think Apple sees it as like the next big platform.
Yeah, and even the artwork for this year's WWDC is very 3D. So everything is three-dimensional. Even when they sent the invitations for press people, there was a 3D version of the iOS switch, UI switch, which was kind of cute. And it looked like a bathtub with some green goop inside it.
I'm sure that was what Johnny Ive intended for it to look like.
So I think the focus is going to be on AR and VR, and yeah, the betting 5 on that is very likely that we are going to win together.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
all right, pick number 4 for you.
I'm going to be very specific with this one. I hope I get it. I'm all going to bet that we are going to get a full dark mode on the Mac. There's going to be an API for that. It's going to be in NS application. The method name is going to be system appearance, and it's going to give you the current system appearance. There's going to be a new appearance on macOS for the dark mode, which is different from the one that we have now. Also, Safari is going to get integrated with it, and it's going to display controls in dark mode when you choose to do so. And web developers are going to be able to opt into and out of from dark mode on their websites. So very specific.
Yeah, and this is for macOS specifically, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's a 5.
It's a 5. All right. Just for the sake of, keeping this interesting and keeping this a game, I'm going to bet 3. And the reason for that is we've heard a lot of whispers that this is going to be a quiet year and that the big redesigns and the big changes are going to be saved for next year because they're going to focus on bug fixes and internal kind of improvements for this year. Now, we don't know. That might be just like a little false rumor that Apple will, you know, they will come in on Monday and completely blow us away. Or it might be, you know, setting the right expectations. So if I'm thinking about how Apple usually do these things, I mean, if we think about how they did it with iOS 7, where they like rolled a bunch of different changes in UI improvements or changes at least into the same one release. And I think that might be what we'll see next year. And whether dark mode will be a part of that or not, I don't know. But that's why I'm betting 3.
Yeah, we know that I've seen some stuff about this dark mode thing. But again, I can always be wrong, and I've been wrong before many times. So yeah, I could be wrong, and they can always change their mind. They could be working on it and decided to not do it anymore. So yeah, let's see. I'm hopeful because I really like dark mode.
Yeah, like we talked about on a previous episode as well, I would love to see a dark mode for the Mac and, you know, to have everything nice and consistent. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it's actually going to be in the keynote. If there's some kind of big redesign for macOS happening and dark mode is included, then definitely. But if not, they might just, you know, do a little sneaky release on this one, not in the keynote. I don't know. We'll see. So for my fourth pick, let's see. I have to think carefully here. You know what? I think we're going to transition a little bit to the Apple Watch.
Oh.
And yeah, I think this is the year, finally, where we're going to see proper UIKit-based API for watchOS. I think it's time. I think that, you know, the watch has gone through these evolutionary steps. It started out as just a renderer, basically, for the phone. Then the apps became a little bit more powerful. And now we're at the stage where we have this, like, trimmed down version of UIKit running on the watch, and we have this WK interface element kind of API where we can construct UIs in a kind of limited fashion. So I'm really hopeful, and I think this is the year where we're going to see a more powerful UI framework based on UIKit for watchOS. And I'm going to give that a 4.
Okay, so let's make the game more fun. I'm going to bet 3 against it.
Okay. All right. This is interesting. So you're going to bet 3 points that we don't see this.
Yeah. And it's ironic, right, because I put this in the show notes.
That was the bluffing. Yeah. You were playing this game well, sir.
Yeah. So, yeah. Of course, I'd really like for them to do that. I just don't feel like it's going to happen this year. I think they have too much stuff to do already, and it's not coming this year.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a gamble to pick this one. I just think that they have already made these kind of big changes before with the watch platform, and I think they're still kind of early in the life cycle of the product and, you know, of the platform. And they've also seen, or I don't know what they've seen, but from what I can tell, the developer interest has not been like stellar or, you know, huge when it comes to watchOS. And I think maybe also as a preparation for this more unified platform that we might see next year, you know, to unify watchOS with iOS the same way that tvOS and iOS are unified, I think might be like a step in that direction.
Yeah, it'd be really great. WatchKit is, it's cool to make watch apps. I've had fun doing them, but they are so limited. You can't even query an element for its state. You have to, like, you can't ask a button what its title is. You can just set it, and it's weird. So yeah, I think it would be great, but I'm betting against it this time.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one, I think, because for me, you know, I'm giving it a high score, but it's only for fun. And also, again, I'm giving my scores based on my excitement level rather than likelihood, which I don't know if that's a good strategy. But yeah, we'll see what's going to happen. But It would be really, really cool to see some form of more powerful watch API. And now also, since the hardware is pretty capable, and this might be like a thing where they only do it for the latest generation of Apple Watch, and the battery is much better and all these things, so I think they could be a little bit more adventurous in terms of kind of the APIs they offer to developers and not have to be so conservative like they were in the early days of the watch.
It doesn't have to be UIKit on watchOS. It can be just like, we are making the WatchKit APIs more powerful than ever or something like that.
It can just be watchOS 5.0.
No, that's obvious. That's too easy.
Yeah,
but like, some mention that they are improving the API significantly and making them less limited.
Yeah, it's the biggest change since the original watchOS. Something like that.
Yeah. So...
Pick number five for you.
Yeah, you mentioned a phrase that they're going to say, and I'm going to bet that they are going to say something to the effect of iOS 12 is all about stability and refinements.
All right, this is an interesting one.
So, and it's probably going to be Craig Federighi that's going to say that.
Yeah.
And I'm betting a far.
All right. This is also, I think, a little bit of a gamble because Apple, it's a good phrasing you've picked here, I think, because it doesn't kind of show any weakness or anything like that. Because I think that we've heard a lot of rumors about that they are, you know, slowing down the development, maybe in response to, you know, some criticism around the stability and things like that. And, you know, you mentioned the battery problems and all those things that have happened. So this is a good phrasing, I think, because it doesn't say, like, we're sorry. It doesn't say, like, you know, iOS 11 was bad or buggy or we were fixing bugs. It doesn't sound very negative.
Yeah, they're never going to say that.
No. I just think that they're probably going to have a lot of stuff to show, but it might not be, like, all these new features. It might just be new capabilities to existing features. So I'm actually going to bet... a 2 on this one, that they're going to say this, yeah. But only a 2.
And just to clarify, I'm betting on the phrase itself. So if iOS 12 is all about stability and refinements, but the phrase is not said on stage, then I don't get the point. I'm betting that the phrase is going to be said. And the keywords,
it can be close.
Yeah, and the keywords are all about. So if they just say, oh, we've made some stability improvements and refinements, it doesn't count. It has to be
the main focus.
Key point on the keynote.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think that's a 2 for me. But yeah, really good bet, I think.
So what's your next pick?
You know what? Let's do some hardware. I know this is another gamble, but... last year, we actually saw hardware at WWDC. We saw the iMac Pro being previewed. We saw the new MacBook Pro or the speed bump to the MacBook Pro being shown and a refresh.
New iPads.
Exactly. So I'm going to go out here a little bit wild and I'm going to say that I think we're going to see an iPad Pro update. And the reason I think so is they already updated the entry-level iPad during the education event to support the Apple Pencil. So now... there's, of course, still a bunch of differences between the iPad Pro and the entry-level iPad, but I'm not sure if those are all visible to the regular user because, you know, most people, they care mostly about the features that are like, you know, things you can do with a device. They don't care so much about, you know, oh, it's a P3 calibration wide color gamut, you know, and those are like some of the features that the iPad Pro has that the entry-level doesn't. So I think we're going to see some form of update to the iPad Pro that widens the gap between the entry-level iPad and the iPad Pro. And this is a risky one, so I'm going to give it let's give it a 2. It's a risky one, but I would be really happy to see something like this.
I'm giving it a 4.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So my thinking is that, as you mentioned, they have updated the regular iPad. They released new iPad Pros last year. They see the iPad Pro as, of course, a pro machine. We might see some new developer-focused news for iPads, which maybe we'll talk about later. we have the fact that the iPads are still all running with Touch ID, so we might see an iPad Pro with Face ID.
Yeah.
I'd love to have an iPad Pro with an OLED screen, but I think that's asking too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we might get it. And I'm not sure whether it's going to have a notch or not.
Well, I think the reasonable expectation here, if any, is probably very similar body, maybe slight design tweaks, but, you know, packed with new stuff. So Face ID, like you mentioned, you know, faster processor and these things.
Gesture-based navigation.
Yeah, a lot of these things that would be really, really cool. USB-C, maybe. I don't know. The only thing that makes me put it as a 2, like as a something I don't think is very likely, is because I think this is a September thing, especially if it's going to have a more powerful processor. I think they would, you know, save it until September when they announce the new iPhones.
But you see, I was actually going to mention that I don't think they would wait until September, because September is all about the iPhone.
Yeah, maybe.
But then they could hold it for October, because they do have October events.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it's a big gamble here.
Yeah, but it would be a really good one to throw in. And especially if they don't have that much other hardware, it would be, you know, a really good upgrade and something they could probably pull off, like bringing some of the tech from the iPhone X into the iPad Pro, and also just differentiating it further from the entry-level one.
Okay, my next pick is about the elephant in the room. There's going to be a huge elephant in the WWDC room, the keynote room, and that elephant is called the MacBook Pro. So my bet is that there's going to be a new MacBook Pro announced, and it's going to have something new about its keyboard.
All right.
And it's going to be mentioned. So they have to mention something about the new keyboard.
Uh-huh. That they have the courage to improve it?
Yeah, I'm going to give that 4.
Yeah, this seems like something that they probably should do. I mean, I really like the new keyboard, but at the same time, I'm terrified of breaking it because of all the stories we've heard of keys getting stuck, and apparently the failure rate is through the roof and all these kind of things. So this is probably something they should do. They should revise the keyboard. I'm just thinking, you know, they went for so long without updating the Mac Pro because they painted themselves into a thermal corner. And I'm thinking maybe they painted themselves into a laptop thinness corner here, that they made it so thin that it's going to be hard to make it, you know, more reliable without making it thicker, which I don't think they're going to do. So it's a gamble. I'm going to give it a 3. I think it's likely it can happen, but at the same time, I think it might be too early to see a brand new keyboard design just 1 year later.
Yeah, I am thinking maybe the developers could revolt or something if they don't talk about it. Because I feel like developers are one of the most affected populations, because we type all day. And even though I haven't had any issues with this keyboard, and I actually like it, like you said, I'm worried because, like, my R key, the R key, it has a different feeling from the others. And as you know, the R key is used very heavily with Xcode, because you
right.
Can command
that's
R.
Why it's getting stuck.
Yeah, so yeah. It's working perfectly. It's not stuck. It still registers normally, but it has a different feeling from the others, and that worries me a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm really scared whenever I'm typing on this keyboard, and whenever my dog comes around, I'm like, "Oh no, there's going to be some dog hair getting stuck in this keyboard and it's not going to work anymore." So from a reliability perspective, I would love to see it being revised, even though I also like the feel of it.
Yeah, I do.
I just think it might be a little bit too early, like I mentioned. And I think it's something like, they would really not want to rush into this. I mean, think again about, we talked about messages in the cloud, right? It took them, I don't know, did it take them like 2 years from the when they announced it until it actually now is released?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that. And it's, I think something similar is happening here with the MacBook Pro, where they probably don't want to rush out a new design, but at the same time, maybe they should. So yeah, it's a tricky situation. So yeah, that's why I'm giving it a 3. But you're giving it a 4. For my next pick, I'm going to go with a new, much more powerful version of Swift Playgrounds on the iPad. So a more, you know, sophisticated development environment. And, you know, Apple, they continue pushing the iPad forward and they see it as the future of computing. So, of course, we're at the developer conference. Developers want to use the future of computing. So let's make it possible to actually build apps on the iPad. I'm not sure if this is the year when we're going to see like a full Xcode on the iPad, but it would be really, really cool to see like a more sophisticated version of Playgrounds, perhaps like with a easier way to import third-party code, maybe an easier way to share code with others or things like that. Maybe you can have like a mini app store where you could download these like apps that were made using Swift Playgrounds or something. Maybe they could have a limited API. I don't know. There's a lot of different shapes and forms this can take, but I'm betting on that there's going to be like a new version of Swift Playgrounds, and it's going to be advertised during the keynote that, you know, look at what you can now do with Swift Playgrounds. It's no longer just a learning tool. It's now like a complete developer environment.
That would be awesome. And how much are you betting on that?
I'm giving that a 3 as well. I think it's a something, you know, it could happen. And again, to clarify, we're not just talking about like a new version with like some new features. We're talking about like a
significant
bigger
update.
Leap. Yeah, significant update where you can do things with that you couldn't really do before. So yeah, I'm giving it that a 3 based on that.
I'm actually going to go 3 against it. Not because I don't think it's going to happen, but because I don't think they're going to mention it on the keynote.
Right. Okay. You think it's more going to be like a State of Union kind of
thing?
Or maybe
they're
like
probably
afterwards.
Going to spend a long time on the State of the Union talking about it, but I don't think it's going to get airtime on the keynote.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because the keynote is not only a developer event, like we mentioned. It's more like a normal Apple event.
Yeah. Another thing that they could add to Playgrounds, which our friend Erica Sadun mentioned recently on Twitter, is a way for people to collaborate. So maybe some sort of pair programming feature that you can do remotely. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Or even something like, you know, integrating with Git or something like that. You know, like, I would love to see features that would just make it possible to bring the iPad if you want to do some lightweight work, maybe not like build full-fledged apps and build Mac apps or whatever, but just like a way to more easily use your code on the go.
Another really cool thing they could do for Playgrounds that I wish we have had before is the ability for you to work on a playground on your Mac, but have it actually run on a real device instead of a little simulator window.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah, so that would be really cool.
It feels like Playgrounds is something where Apple has just scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. And now they have the Playgrounds app for iPad, they have Playgrounds in Xcode. It feels also at some point these are going to merge some way or, you know, become more the same kind of thing, because right now they are very, very different. Playgrounds in Xcode is like, let me prototype some code here real quick, while Playgrounds for iPad is more like a learning tool, like let's learn how to code. At least that's how it's being pitched.
Yeah, and the Playground books from iPad are not compatible with the Mac version.
Right, exactly. So that's kind of what I'm talking about here, like a step in that direction, like to make that app more powerful and more kind of, you know, have some of the features that are on the Mac.
Cool. So I'm going to be specific again. And you know that if I'm specific, it's because reasons. So I'm going to bet on a single sign-on solution with iCloud for websites. And it's going to use your iPhone camera to scan a QR code and authorize using an already logged in device. So I go to soandso.com and I have a login form. And just like we have login with Google and login with Facebook, we're going to see login with Apple ID or login with iCloud, and I'm going to authorize that login using another device, maybe scanning a QR code with the camera.
All right. And how many points?
It's a 3.
All right. I'm going to give that one a 2. It's something that I would also love to see. And I think there are some really good reasons why Apple might do this. But I also think it's something that will either just like be like a developer preview this year. It won't like roll out fully. And that's why I don't think it might be in the keynote, more like a kind of developer session kind of thing. Because it's a quite complex thing and requires like a lot of websites and developers to implement it.
That's a good point. Yeah. Maybe they're going to just have a session about it and then release it in the fall.
Yeah, but in terms of strategy, I think this is kind of one thing that I think Apple will totally do at some point. Because if you think about what they've done with Apple Pay, which is essentially abstract away the credit card, like they will actually give the vendor like a, not a fake credit card, but they will give it like a one-time use credit card number and then link that to your bank account. And they could do the same thing here where, you know, Apple, they're all about privacy. And I'm sure that they are not super happy about, you know, Apple users having to use all these third-party services to log in and, you know, remember passwords and things like that. So I'm sure that they would love to see some solution like this where you have like an Apple ID that you can just log in to any service with.
Yeah, the privacy aspect is why they would do it probably, because then you can log in and you can be sure that your activity on the website is not being tracked so Apple can sell your stuff to advertiser or something.
Yeah, because probably the service would just get like a token. They would just get like a user token that they can, you know, yeah, associate the user with,
and
but they wouldn't know necessarily anything about the user.
Yeah, I think they're going to get your email address as well, because it would be really hard to make the services actually use it without that, because you need something about the user, maybe a name. And that's been in iOS, and I have checked it out, and the alert that appears to the user mentions that it's going to get your data or something. I don't remember the phrasing, the precise phrasing, but it implied that the website is going to get something about you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it would make sense because, yeah, there needs to be a reason for developers or services to implement this. And also, like, that's kind of the appeal of something like a Facebook sign-in, where if you sign up by email, you have to enter all these fields manually, and, you know, it's a lot of work. But if you sign in with Facebook, it's all there. Like, they can just pull all your information from Facebook and just, you know, populate their user account with it.
Yeah, and with the email thing, some people might be thinking, but what about spam? They could have a policy that explicitly mentions that the user has to opt in explicitly to receive emails from you, and they could have an approval process for websites where someone checks that they are following the policy and that newsletters are not opt out but opt in when using iCloud to log in. So there are solutions for that.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool to see. Even though now with Face ID, I almost feel like we're almost there already, at least for services where you already have an account. Because now you go to a website, it just uses Face ID to fill in the username and password and logs you in. So it's almost there, but it would be really cool to get this also for services that you haven't signed up for and to be able to just do that with like one tap or like scan a code, like you say.
Yeah, and not have to log in with Facebook or Google. Because some places don't offer other options.
Yeah, that's right. Or at least like they have a huge button for logging with Facebook, and then you have to like click 5 pages deep in order to find a sign in with email link. I'm going to pick another one here, and this is another like a little bit of a gamble, but you know, I know that you are very excited about this one, and I'm talking about AirPower. So we talked before the education event that we might see something regarding AirPower, maybe not in the event, but as a press release or something. But it's now been a while. It was in September where AirPower was announced, and we still haven't seen it. So I think that this is going to be the time when Apple finally gives us a release date for AirPower, because it's kind of overdue. Didn't they say like early 2018 or something like that?
Yeah, early 2018.
Yeah. So I think we're going to get a firm release date. It might be something like it's available today. It might be it's available later. But I think they want to give an update on that because it's been, you know, so long now.
Yeah, I think for this one, we can go with air power is going to be mentioned.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, we abandoned the air power project. I hope that's, the, I hope
well,
that's not going to be the...
That will work.
All right, so I'm going to give this one, I'm going to go all in on this one and say, I think they're definitely going to mention air power during this event. I feel like they kind of need to, and so I'm going to give it a 5.
It's a 5 for me. I think they're going to mention it, and I'm going to go beyond that. I'm not betting on this, so I'm betting 5 that it's going to be mentioned. But I also think that they're going to announce that it's going to ship in September with the new iPhones. I don't feel like it's going to ship before iOS 12 is in the hands of all users.
Do you think the reason it's being delayed is because of software things and they need iOS 12 in order for the software to work?
I actually think it's more about hardware. I've seen some people mention that they were having heat issues, that three devices charging at the same time was... It was getting too hot, basically, and they needed to rework on the heat dissipation aspect. And the components on iOS responsible for air power and the cool animation we talked about before many times, those are gone from iOS since 11.2, I think, and they are not back yet. So I think that's coming on iOS 12. And of course, people are not going to get iOS 12 until later this year. And so I think they are going to release it in September.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. But yeah, I think it's definitely going to be announced during the keynote. All right, it's time for round number 7.
Okay, Apple has a huge focus on health as well. Not only AR and VR, like we mentioned before. So I'm going to bet that there's going to be a new feature on iOS that allows users to see how much time they are spending on apps. And maybe even, let's pick Mail as an example. It's going to be able to tell you how much time you're spending writing emails versus reading emails and stuff like that. So
similar to the feature that Google announced at Google I/O, where you can see all the information and stats about how you're using your phone.
Yeah, and it's going to be announced with a health perspective to it.
Oh, so you think it's going to like feed into the health app?
Not that it's going to be the health app necessarily, but I think they're going to say that it's for health, basically, that it's an important aspect of your health is to make sure you're not using your devices too much or something.
Right. So they're going to bundle this with like the health updates and like the research and things like that they're doing usually when they're talking about watchOS.
Yeah, it could be. And could be something in settings. I don't know. But I think there's going to be a feature that allows users to see how much time they're spending in apps. And I think this is a 4.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, now that Apple saw Google announce this a couple of weeks ago, I'm sure they have rushed to implement this and going to ship it, right? That's how it works?
Yeah, of course. So Tim Cook wakes up and some secretary tells him, hey, Google is doing this. And then he goes to the engineering team and, hey, we must do this.
Yeah, build this. Just build what they built, right? Just copy it. How hard can it be?
That's how tech works.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting. I think, yeah, this is definitely something that I think is likely. And the health aspect that you mentioned is interesting since Apple is already doing so much about health. So I also think it's very likely. I'm actually going to give it a 5. I think it's very, very likely that we're going to see something like that. And some better, are we also bundling this maybe with better parental controls?
Yeah, let's bundle that. We only have 10 picks each, and I don't think we're going to get to that. So another one we have on our list is improved parental controls, and I think they could be bundled with this feature. And also, I just had an idea. Maybe parents would be able to see how much time their children are spending in apps.
That's kind a of bit like creepy, class kids.
But yeah. Hey, they're your parents.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the class kit framework that we talked about a couple of episodes ago, where you have like a different lens into the same data, where, you know, your parent could see, well, hopefully not my parents, because I think I'm a little bit too old for that. But parents in general could see their the way their kids are using the devices. And maybe, you know, since Apple is also very heavy on privacy, maybe not like, you know, see the full web history or something like that, but maybe see some stats like, well, in general, baby John is using his iPad 5-6 hours every night when he should be sleeping instead. So maybe something like that could be visible to parents.
Yeah, I think it's going to, if they do that, it would be limited to the app level. So your child spends 6 hours in Snapchat this week,
right,
or something. It wouldn't like show the parents what exactly the child was doing.
So then you can always do the thing, but hey, it's for work.
Yeah,
it's for school.
Yeah, so it would just show like how many hours you're spending on each thing, how many screen hours are you getting in total. So based on every time the screen wakes up. And fun fact, iOS is already collecting that kind of data for a long time.
Oh, all right. Interesting. Is that for like device metrics and for things that they use to improve the devices or things like that? Or
Not this subsystem, which is the CarDuet system. This one is for the proactive stuff, and it's also used to decide which apps should be awake in the background at which times.
Oh, right.
And stuff like that. So mm-hmm. They are already collecting some of that data, and it's all local. It's never sent to Apple.
All right, cool. Yeah, so I definitely think that we're going to see something like this, like some form of dashboard, some form of stats, maybe call it digital health or something like that, so that you can see how you're using your devices and maybe control it for your kids and things like that.
And the thing you mentioned about bundling it to the health app makes sense. I think they could do it. Not necessarily.
Yeah, because
but
they
be
already
nice.
Have that as like a hub, right? Even though it's not super related, but I'm sure they could make it sound like it's related.
Yeah, they could use the what you mentioned, call it digital health.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so for my seventh pick, I'm going to go with a new version of CoreML. So CoreML, like ARKit, was a big part of last year's WWDC, but it's kind of limited in many ways. And you can only use CoreML for machine learning with models that you've already trained. So you need to pre-train models using other tools on your Mac or on your you know, in some other environment. And then you bundle that model with your app, and then you can use that from CoreML in order to, you know, use machine learning features. So I think with this year, we're going to see a new version of CoreML, CoreML 2.0, and it's going to support on-device machine learning. So you're going to be able to do the learning process on device, which Apple, they're already doing for a bunch of things like Face ID and all these kind of features that they have. But now that's also going to be available to developers. And I'm going to go with another 5 here. I think this will definitely happen.
Yeah, I'll go with a 5 as well.
All right.
What else do we think they could do for CoreML?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, CoreML, it's very powerful already, especially as a 1.0, but the API is a little bit limited. Like I mentioned, you can only use pre-trained models. So I'm not sure actually what they could do to widen the API more than supporting on-device machine learning, perhaps support for other types of formats and things without having to use a converter, because right now, Apple, they have this CoreML tools that you can use to convert a machine learning model from another format, for example, from TensorFlow, and use it in CoreML. But it would be cool if you could just use those models without having to convert them, maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that makes sense. And we have another item that I'm going to bundle up with this one, since we're not going to talk about it, which is Turi Create. They released Turi Create a while ago, and it's a really nice framework of sorts to create machine learning models, and you can export some of their models to the CoreML format. And I've actually spoken to some people on the Turi Create team, and they are very nice people, and they are working always to make it better. And I have an open issue with a feature request that I hope is coming.
And what is that?
It's to be able to export the Turi Create recommender model to CoreML.
Oh, right. Okay. And so you think that Turi Create is going to be, I mean, because Turi Create is already here, so you think it's going to be on iOS, or what is your additional bet? I almost feel like this is a separate item.
Yeah, no, it is a separate item, but I'm not betting on it because we only get to choose 10, so I have better ones to pick. So
this was me trying to lure you into picking this
one.
Yeah,
I'm not picking it, but I think they might bundle it with CoreML in some way, and it's not going to use the CoreML model. It's going to use some other data structure. So let's call it Turi Create for iOS, but it doesn't have to be that exactly. But I'm not betting on it, just to be clear.
I'm not betting on it either.
Yeah. So.
All right, pick number 8, go.
Okay, so for my number 8 pick, I'm going to bet that this is a big one. We are going to see a new iPhone SE released. Ooh. And I'm going to go against what I said on Twitter before, and I'm going to say that it's going to have a design similar to the iPhone X.
Oh, plot twist.
Yeah, but it's not going to have Face ID or an OLED screen. It's going to be a regular LCD screen.
So it's going to be like one of those Android phones that just looks like it has a notch, but it doesn't actually have to have a notch.
Yeah. So yeah, all right. So that's my pick. And maybe it's going to have the iPhone 7 processor.
All right, so iPhone 7 processor, but iPhone 10 design language.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet a 5 against that.
I'm going to bet a 1 for that.
All right. I don't think that's very likely, but who knows? Maybe it can happen. I'm not even sure we're going to see an iPhone SE. I think if we're going to see an iPhone SE, it's going to be in September. I think it would be very strange to see an iPhone in this event.
If they release an iPhone SE and it doesn't have the iPhone X design language, I lose.
Yes, and I win 5 points. So let's hope that happens. But it would be cool to see an iPhone SE. It really would. It's been a while now since it's been updated. But I don't think this is the event for it. And they've already gone long enough. And I feel when Apple has gone long enough that a product hasn't been updated for a while, they just take their sweet time. And I mean, we've seen this with the with the iMac Pro or the Mac Pro. We've seen this with
Mac
the
Mini.
MacBook Pros, with the Mac Mini, you know, mostly Macs, I guess. But
weird trend there.
Yeah, weird trend. Exactly. I think if we're going to see a new iPhone SE, it's going to be in the fall.
So what's your next pick?
All right. So my next pick is going to be that we're going to see a new version of the Mac App Store.
Ooh, big one.
And yeah, and we have two items here, and I think we should treat them as separately, because we have one that says that we think the iOS App Store and the Mac App Store will be merged. And we have another one, which is like a new version or redesign of the Mac App Store. And I'm picking the latter there. I think that we're going to see a revamped Mac App Store. And, you know, this is kind of a running joke now. You know, maybe this is the year of the new Mac App Store and Linux on the desktop.
I've been
you know?
Waiting for that for like four WWDC editions. Every WWDC I say, oh, this is the year they're going to finally change the Mac App Store, and nothing.
But you know why I think this will happen? Because they made such a huge redesign of the iOS App Store last year. And I feel like now under Phil Schiller, there has been so many improvements to the App Store, both for us developers in terms of the review time. We've had like the redesign, you know, better cut for developers who use subscriptions. There's been all kinds of improvements. So I feel like the way they've been tackling the whole App Store kind of business is to just improve one thing at a time. Like let's basically build a list of improvements we want to make. And of course, the iOS stuff comes at the top of the list, but I feel now they're at the point where the App Store is pretty great. Everyone seems to like it a lot, and no one is really complaining about the iOS App Store so much anymore. You know, they have, you know, there's been some, of course, debate about certain features like the search ads and things like that. But in general, I feel like a lot of developers are more happy with the App Store than they've been in a while with the review times and all of that. So I feel like this is the time where they can say, we've done all those improvements on iOS, now let's focus on the Mac for this year and actually update the Mac App Store. So I'm going to give that a 3.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to give that a 4, actually.
No, I convinced you.
Yeah.
All right. This has been really fun, but now we're at the final round. So, Rambo, what's your final pick?
So, my next pick is that they're going to be merging the Mac App Store and the iOS App Store.
I should have seen this one coming.
So, I don't know how we would judge this one against the other one. I think if this one happens, the other one is also considered, right?
Yeah.
Merging the two app stores would mean a redesigned Mac App Store.
Well, are we talking about merging the design? Are we talking about merging the functionality? Like, are we talking about universal binaries here? Or are we talking about that they will use the same kind of design?
No, I don't mean merging the platforms. I mean merging the app stores. Only the
okay.
app stores.
All right. So the Mac App Store will look the same way as the iOS App Store.
It will look the same, but then you'd also be able to browse iOS apps on the Mac and vice versa,
right.
Which is already true. And also, if you buy an iOS app that has a macOS app, you can have the option to have that Mac app automatically installed or vice versa. And developers will be able to offer bundles that include their macOS and iOS apps if they want to. But it's not a single binary, but it's a single product. Because currently, if you have an iOS app and a Mac app, they are separate products in the App Store. They are not the same product. While your iOS app and your tvOS app are the same products.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense. I think that could be... Or did you give your number?
No, I'm going to give it a 3.
I'm going to give that a 2. I think that could happen, but I feel like this is maybe something they will save for when they will do the unification of the platforms.
Yeah, you see, I think they would do it this year in preparation for next year.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's definitely an angle. So I think it could happen, but... I'm going to say 2 just for the sport.
Cool. So what's your next pick?
All right. So for my next pick, you know, now that we're talking about these dreams that developer has, you know, revamped Mac App Store, why not throw in another one in there and talk about third-party watch faces?
Yay.
So this is something that some people, they think that Apple will never do. And I can understand why, because the watch faces are so much part of the Apple Watch brand. Because, you know, that's what you see. But at the same time, the watch is off most of the time. So you mostly see the watch face just when you're looking at it, which is just you. So I think it's getting more and more likely, at least the way I see it, especially since they added a complication support and these kind of things. And it seems to be more like a surface that they want developers to be able to target. And for me, like, third-party watch face is just an extension of that, where you could also build the actual UI of the watch face itself. So I'm going to give that a... Let's gamble a little bit and give it a 4.
I'm giving it a far against.
Okay, all right.
So I don't think it's going to happen this year.
Do you think it will happen ever, or do you don't think it's going to happen this year?
On an infinite timescale.
Oh, yeah, of course. But I mean, until the watch has been replaced by the eye hologram.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen eventually. But I really don't think it's going to be this year.
All right. Yeah, it is a very big gamble on my part, but you know, you have to play to win, right? You have to play you have to take chances to win.
To win that amazing dinner in that place. Yeah, exactly. You're going to.
Oh yeah. So I think it would be super cool, and like I mentioned, I think this is a good year to make like a bigger leap for the watch because they have been making these incremental upgrades. And for me, like third-party watch faces is like when they announced, you know, they made this big change in iOS 8 for iOS where they added all these extensions, and they also announced like, oh, by the way, you can now build third-party keyboards. And I feel like third-party watch faces could be something like that, where if Watch OS and WatchKit becomes more powerful, then third-party watch faces could be something they throw in there. It's like, oh, by the way, you know, you can now also build third-party watch faces, because we now have all this power. All right, that's all of our picks. So why don't we do some like honorable mentions? Just like some of the things that we had on our list that we didn't feel worthy enough to bet on it, but things that we've still, you know, thought could be possible.
Yeah, some of them would be worthy, but we only had 10 and we had a huge list. So here are some honorable mentions. And I'm going to start with one that's not on the list because I forgot to add it. Okay.
That's a very honorable mention.
Yeah, I'm going to say that we might see a HomePod developer beta.
Ooh, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, so they might be releasing some new SiriKit intents and maybe a HomePod beta.
Oh yeah, we didn't even have that on the list either. Yeah, like talking about SiriKit.
So yes, those are two items. Why don't you mention some?
Yeah, so we talked about before that, you know, we could see also dark mode on iOS. We could have better picture-in-picture support, both for macOS and on the iPhone. We talked a little bit about it would be cool to have some hot reloading feature, like there's injection for Xcode to be able to hot reload your code, like you can do when you use tools like React Native, and that would be super cool to see in Xcode as well. In the education event, they talked about that you can use multiple users on one iPad, and it would be great to see that come to iOS proper as well. And we have a bunch of other things. You want to mention a few as well, Rambo?
Yeah, I also added that the event is going to have a strong focus on privacy and security, and that they are going to get mentioned very often. Also, in-app Apple Pay and card provisioning on macOS. You can do Apple Pay in apps on iOS, and that's not available on the Mac yet. And if you want to register your card and you have to call your bank or something when you're doing it on the Mac, and on iOS you can use apps, so I think that's coming to the Mac as well. Drag and drop support on iPhone, like full drag and drop between apps, that would be really cool. Also, and this is a really good one, first party sleep tracking on watchOS, which is done with third-party apps. Do you want to mention the ones that are left?
Yeah, sure. So we also had to be able to use FaceTime with multiple users, so have like group calls on FaceTime, have a separate music app on macOS, like move the music, Apple Music, outside of iTunes. Maybe we can see a glimpse at the Mac Pro.
Can't innovate anymore, my ass.
Maybe we can see more advanced features in Xcode Playgrounds on the Mac, like be able to import your app code and work on it in a playground. And maybe we're going to see a podcast app finally on the Apple Watch. Well, that one I actually really hope for, because I would love to see a podcast app on the Apple Watch.
So we have an aspect of this year's WWDC, which I'm not sure is specific to this year, but I definitely feel like we've had less leaks and concrete rumors than we've had in the past. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, WWDC is something that usually doesn't leak that much because it's so contained within Apple. Usually when we see a lot of leaks, they're you know, coming from the supply chain or something like that, or there are some new big projects like far away into the future or something like that that we can speculate about. But when it comes to like new APIs or new features in iOS, they're usually kept fairly under wraps.
Yeah, because people that are working on this, they are from the mothership. So they are working inside Apple and they don't have usually the same incentive that supply chain employees have to leak stuff. And since WWDC is mostly focused on software, we only get leaks when there's new hardware coming, and we've had very few leaks this year. And for software, it's only when Apple themselves screw up somehow. One of the leaks that came out recently is that there's going to be a new Pride watch face for watchOS.
Uh-huh.
And that could be mentioned in the keynote, but it could be coming only when they announce the GM. So, yeah, so it's interesting. And it either means that they have managed to keep things private or that there are not going to be that many news.
Yeah, we'll see.
And I hope it's the former.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, like we've mentioned, a lot of these changes are kind of improvements to existing tools and existing frameworks. And those are not really bound to leak that much. When leaks happen often in software, it's like when you are finding some new device identifiers or even glyphs of new products, right? But yeah. It's not very often that you see like CoreML 2.0 in an earlier version of iOS or something like that. That's usually something they can keep separate and something they can keep the lid on.
Yeah, like the Books app thing, that was probably a screw-up, and it's hard for that to happen because they are usually very careful.
Yeah. All right, so I hope that you all enjoyed this special WWDC poker episode. It was a lot of fun to do it, and it's always fun to speculate what's going to happen. Of course, we're going to see in just a few days, actually, if we ended up being right or wrong. Are we going to end up getting plus points or minus points? Who's going to win? It's going to be really, really exciting. So we're both going to watch the keynote with great suspense this year to see, you know, who's going to win this first poker game.
Yeah, and you can follow me and John on Twitter. I'm definitely going to be tweeting during the keynote, probably with some fun jokes because I love making fun of keynotes, like when Tim introduced the TV app for tvOS on Apple TV.
Uh-huh.
That was very funny. so follow us, and why don't you remind our listeners about the after show once again?
Sure, yeah. So make sure to check out our after show. It's again going to be on the Tuesday of WWDC on the 5th. You can go to stacktracepodcast.fm/aftershow, and that will redirect you to Patreon, where you can sign up to become part of the after show. And we're really excited about this, and we think it's going to be a lot of fun. And of course, we will, for the first time, also reveal the results of our poker game on the after show. So if you want to come there and, you know, discuss that with us and have some fun, and make sure to sign up for the after show. But for now, that's it. We're going to wait patiently for the keynote and for WWDC. It's going to be a lot of fun next week. I'm going to put out a lot of extra content for WWDC. Rambo is going to, of course, tweet a lot, and I'm sure you're going to spelunk all the new SDKs and all the new firmwares as well, right?
Yeah, I haven't had time to spelunk the final 11.4 releases yet because I'm very busy updating my unofficial WWDC app for macOS.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that later, and I hope I don't find any big thing in there because then our episode is going to be outdated.
Yeah. So like Guy mentioned, you can find us on Twitter. I am at John Sundell, and Rambo is at _inside. You can find us on Twitter as well with StackTrace at StackTracePod. And you can find the show notes for this episode at StackTracePodcast.fm. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.